This name is just symbolic, referring to, for example, as I mentioned, a cultural movement or an intellectual movement, which is against the movement of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. But this theory, we believe that cannot be accepted and should be rejected because of different narrations. First of all, there are a couple of narrations which refer to the name of Sufyani.
Okay.
Which means that we are talking about a person and not a symbol, not a movement.
Okay.
The second point is that some of the narrations talk about the lineage of Sufyani, the forefathers, for example, of Sufyani.
Okay.
Again, it shows that we are talking about a person and not a symbol. Third, there are some narrations which talk about the some of the physical features of Sufyani. For example, how his face looks like, for example. And some other points about, his appearance. And again, this group of narrations tell us that Sufyani is a certain person.
Okay.
For example, in one narration, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is quoted as saying, إِنَّكَ لَوْ رَأَيْتَ السُفْيَانِ When you see Sufyani, meaning that it should be a person, لَرَأَيْتَ أَخْبَثَ النَّاسِ You will see the most wicked of the people. Again, Imam says that أَخْبَثَ النَّاسِ Among the people, he is the most wicked person. This is in Kamal al-Din, page 651, chapter 57, hadith number 10. And the next point is that there are some narrations which talk about the religion of Sufyani. Of course, many people might assume that Sufyani, of course, is a Muslim.
Yeah.
But there are some narrations which call him Christian, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But again, these narrations have a message that, again, we are talking about a person. And that is why he is introduced as a Muslim or as a Christian, for example.
Yeah.
And we cannot claim that it is symbolic.
Sure.
The next point is that the narrations which talk about the time and place of the uprising of Sufyani, again, they are talking about one special person. The narrations which talk about his attack to different countries like Iraq, Medina, Mecca, again, they are talking about one army led by a person. The narrations which talk about the fact that Sufyani would be killed.
All right.
Again,
this shows that it's not a moment or it's just one person. Thank you so much, Dr. Karimi. You said that there are many narrations, rather, which show us that Sufyani is a person. Like, we have some narrations telling his name, some narrations telling his lineage, some telling the physical features. Narration from Imam Sadiq al-Islam as well. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Midstream.
The Islamic Revolution, His Eminence Ayatollah Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said a while back that today the resistance movement has become more active and more confident as a result of the blessing of the blood of the transnational martyred leader Haj Qasim Soleimani. On the eve of the third anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani, it has become clear and evident that the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani represents a national and international incident, as he has become an idol and a role model for the youth of the region of West Asia and beyond. When I say beyond, I mean it. Seeing photos of Sardar Soleimani as far as Havana, Cuba, and discussing his revolutionary road towards martyrdom in his firm fight against both imperialism and its terrorist offspring, Daesh, were for me both a miracle and a realization. Martyr Soleimani was both courageous and wise in his struggle for liberation. One example of his wisdom and courage, which the enemies know well but some friends may not know, is that he was able to nullify all the illegitimate plots of the Americans in West Asia with the direct help of the people of the region, or it could be said with the inspiration that he gave to them. This man was able to stand up to all the plots that had been hatched with money, with the vast propaganda efforts of the Americans, with the diplomatic capabilities of the Americans, and with the pressure that they exert on politicians, particularly in countries run by weak puppet regimes. He was able to nullify all the schemes set up with these instruments in West Asia. Given that General Qasem Soleimani was not a figure bounded by Iranian geography, but rather a figure that crossed borders of neighboring Arab countries infested by U.S.-backed terrorism, his assassination had repercussions on a regional level. The assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani did not achieve the American goals of weakening the axis of resistance. Rather, his martyrdom had a major role in crystallizing what has become known as the Soleimani School. With his martyrdom, Commander Qasem Soleimani created great regional capabilities, all of which pour into the same goal and carry the revolutionary spirit and creative mind that Hash Qasem had founded. Hash Qasem Soleimani is a holistic model with personality and dimensions, especially humanity, which is why today many young people in the Islamic world, especially in this region, are thirsty for heroes like him. That is why he acquired the status of the martyr of the axis of resistance, the international martyr, or as Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah put it, the master of the martyrs of the resistance axis. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, Ammar Osman. On the third anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, we remember Shahid Soleimani, who was not a figure limited by Iranian geography, but rather a figure that transcended borders. His main role was confronting the American-Israeli project with all its tools, hence why his assassination had repercussions on both the regional and the international level. The assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani did not achieve the American goals of weakening the axis of resistance. Rather, his martyrdom had a major role in crystallizing what has come to be known as the Soleimani School, as the capabilities of the axis of resistance increased. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Bilal Laqis, academic, researcher, and political commentator. Thank you very much, Dr. Bilal, for being with us on such a special occasion. Now, Martyr Soleimani was committed in his lifetime to Islamic values and the principles of the Islamic Revolution as well, and he bore the suffering of the struggle to achieve these principles and remained loyal to all his duties towards the Iranian people and the Islamic nation as a whole. Those same values are today being attacked by Western liberalism and Western imperialism in an attempt to try to culturally and militarily maybe invade our region, and specifically the Islamic Republic of Iran. How has the school of Qasem Soleimani helped stop this invasion, and what can it do to continue to do so?
Good evening to you. On this exceptional anniversary and occasion, the anniversary of the martyrdom of Hash Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we condole our people and bless them at the same time. We condole our Arabic and Islamic peoples and the oppressed people of this world for losing such a quality of leaders. We also bless them and congratulate them because we perceive such a martyrdom in the face of an arrogant enemy such as the American regime as a sign of pride and dignity for the person who attains it. And at the same time, it is a great and positive push for the nation and for this person's school of thought. As you mentioned, it is clear that Hash Qasem Soleimani as a person abbreviated an entire school of thought. Perhaps a few martyrs throughout history are known for their martyrdom being an abbreviation and expression of a school of thought. The model of Qasem Soleimani was in fact a symbol for a school of thought. If we contemplate the nature of the past, current, and future conflict, and contemplate the school of Hajj Qasim Soleimani, which, according to our understanding, comes from a source which is the Muhammad Alawi understanding of life, of man, of values, and of the nature of conflict, anyone who reflects well on this school sees that the origin of it is jihad. Not the military one, but the origin of this school, or the set of origins of this school, from which one of these basic and central origins emerges, is the origin of jihad. But what is meant by jihad here is not direct military jihad. The word jihad is broader and includes all fields and all aspects. Military jihad must be associated with the jihad of statement, clarification, and illumination, because military action, according to the Soleimani school, or the credibility of military jihad here, is the last phase that the oppressed can resort to in the face of the arrogant, in order to form awareness and restore the values, culture, vision, and the intellectual system in which one believes. Hajj Qasim believed that the West, led by the American regime, did not want to overthrow its opponents or enemies militarily. In fact, and as confirmed by writings, theories, practice, and experience that we all touched, at least in the first stage of the rise of the American hegemony in World War I. We see that it was always used in military action by the United States of America as a prelude in order to subjugate the opponent and destabilize its values, then later converting its values to the Western system. Like it or not, the military conflict remains an interim conflict, and it is not an extended or continuous conflict. In other words, it is possible for a country to launch a military war, but the result will not be a military one, but rather psychological, cultural, or intellectual. Therefore, the Americans have always, since the First World War and the Second, to all their practices in our region through their direct military presence or through their tools, especially the Zionist entity, they were trying to adapt or change the values, culture, intellectual, and emotional system of this region from the window of military action. Therefore, the jihad movement for Hajj Qasim Soleimani was a comprehensive title in order to establish values, in order to restore identity, and then in order to display and demonstrate values to the whole world on the basis of equality.
من أجل استعادة الهوية ثم أيضا من أجل عرض وتبيان القيم على العالم كله انطلاقا من الندية.
Professor Bilal, is this why his honesty, his sincerity, the essence of Hajj Qasim Soleimani, his school and his blessed life and martyrdom, is this why he was killed? What was it that made his enemies fear him to a point of assassinating him?
No.
You notice, for example, that when we compare or disparage today between the experience or the school that Qasim Soleimani established and which successfully confronted the Americans, as Newsweek reported on its homepage, it says that Soleimani confronted the Americans and at the same time overthrew ISIS. Therefore, we are facing a model that rejects two extremes or confronts two extremes: the extremism of American hegemony and arrogance, the extremism of ignorance and negligence in approaching issues and causes. It is as if Hajj Qasim in his school says no to domination and arrogance, and also no to petrification and the rigid mind, especially if it comes with a religious title. Therefore, the school of Hajj Qasim Soleimani has its advantage, in the sense that the military dimension in it is the necessary choice somewhere. But it is not the choice that is placed before humanity, because the origin is how we present our human values. The original understanding of the conflict begins with the understanding that the Americans want to strike at the values and intellectual system of its opponents and exploit the military arena, just as later he exploits the economic arena, and in the coming period he can exploit the cultural arena. Hajj Qasim's school of thought adapts and moves with time and place. So yes, in one of the moments that we went through, it was the first and central necessity to preserve values, identity, and the meanings of dignity and true freedom. Not that of the liberalism style that today is still looking for the meaning of freedom. To preserve all of this, we need to repel the attack, which is apparently military. If the military illusion does not fall within the Western mind, then many of our societies and nations will be crushed, and cultural and intellectual change will begin, as happened in the 60s and 70s at the level of our nation. Therefore, the system and perspective are broad and comprehensive, And at one point in time, the main challenge was to restore identity, as well as to confront the opponent and to clarify the intellectual system. The gateway to that was from the military entrance. Therefore, we cannot talk about Qasim Soleimani, the military man, before we talk about Qasim Soleimani, the human. Qasim Soleimani, who emulates every heart, every mind, and every human experience.
قاسم سليماني الذي يحاكي كل قلب وكل عقل وكل تجربة بشرية.
This is what I want to dive on with you in the second segment of our show. Please stay tuned because next we will be talking about قاسم سليماني the human and how his martyrdom is even more influential than his work as a lieutenant general.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The high level of honesty and sincerity that martyr Haj Qasim Soleimani enjoyed turned him into a model for the aspiring youth in the Islamic world who yearn for the presence of heroes like him. The region of West Asia has witnessed major shifts in favor of the axis of resistance following the martyrdom of Haj Qasim, which is a blessing that came along as a result of Shahid Soleimani's pure blood that was shed 3 years ago. Everyone will leave this world in some way. However, Martyr Soleimani's departure from this world completed the argument against the enemies and all those who witnessed it, making his legacy as a martyr far more dangerous in the enemy's eyes than his role as Lieutenant General and Commander of the Al-Quds Brigades. More in this following report.
Talking about the personality of Martyr Commander Qasim Soleimani needs armies of writers specialized in thought, politics, and military. Martyr Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani was more dangerous in his influence than the living Al-Quds Force Commander Qasim Soleimani. This is because his martyrdom combined the military, jihadist, diplomatic, moral, and humanitarian dimensions. We find that Qasim Soleimani, who wears a combat jacket and war helmet, is the same person who delivers medicine, medical materials, and equipment to his economically besieged country. And he's the same person who weeps in front of orphans and walks barefoot in the Ashura rallies every year. Humility and renunciation from this world and its fake fame and glorification were his qualities that immortalized his jihadist and mystical career at the same time. Commander Soleimani is the one who asks in front of his soldiers if he is an example of a righteous man and if they will testify to him upon his death that he is an honest person. Then he instructs his wife that only the word soldier be written on his grave. His pure love for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala led him to martyrdom. This love that differs from worldly belongings of money, children, and prestige. This divine love that brought tears to his eyes whenever he spoke about it, wishing for martyrdom and joining his comrades on the path of jihad. Martyr Soleimani was soft-hearted and merciful even to the enemies, resorting to dialogue and conversation with them before resorting to military confrontation. This moral and emotional personality is the credibility of the holy verse, "Believers are tough on infidels, but merciful among themselves." Today, Commander Soleimani is an international hero who defended honor. Women and children consider him their father, and the Mujahideen take him as an example to follow, embodying titles of heroism, courage, and enthusiasm. Today, he is the leader of hearts, and the Soleimani school is the role model that the resistance youth need in the path of jihad. It is the school of soft power and struggle to attain faith. The martyrdom of Commander Soleimani and leader Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and their companions was not the end of the resistance march, but rather it was a decisive historical juncture separating two phases, which are not alike in events at all. And the witness to that is what is happening today in the country of arrogance in terms of confusion and scandals. those whom martyr Soleimani humiliated in the region of West Asia and thwarted their plans of segregation, yesterday were celebrating the death of our martyr, claiming that the world will be safer today. But the hand of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is above theirs. And here is history revealing to us how the black magic began to turn against the Western imperial magician. Today, on the third anniversary of the hero's martyrdom, the oppressed in this land renew their covenant with the martyr and chant, "We are all Soleimani."
Now, we are still right here in Beirut with Dr. Bilal Laqis, academic researcher and political commentator. Thank you for still being with us, Dr. Bilal. We need to talk about how writers specialized in thought, in politics, in military, and even in philosophy, they all claim that martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was more dangerous in his influence than the living Al-Quds Force commander, Qasem Soleimani. In what ways do you think that is true?
Yes, of course. As we were just talking a little while ago, Qasem Soleimani's school of thought is a jihadi school in the comprehensive sense. Therefore, his school was one that gives, along with the military success, the programming of resistance. Soleimani's school, along with the military victory, gives a culture of liberation and freedom. Therefore, with his martyrdom on the one hand and his work before his martyrdom as well, he was generating a value syndrome along with the military action. His work was not done in the same way that many military experiences are conducted. In reality, his work consisted of building humans. The Soleimani school established with every military victory an intellectual system and the cultural and intellectual school. He did not possess weapons, although he participated in giving weapons for resistance movements. Rather, he gave a mental software and a mind, so that this mind and thought can generate the will, produce weapons to carry out the resistance action. When we say Soleimani's school of thought, what is meant is that it is a school that educates. A school is not a monolithic. A school is not a monolithic act. Schooling is not done in a single dimension. The school is an integrated system that produces a personality whose title and centrality of its work and focus is how to create true liberation and restore all the value system, through which we can reserve status as individuals and as a group. Therefore, I meant by saying that when the enemy thought of assassinating Haj Qasem, I think their analysis was very crusty, superficial, and perhaps even emotional at a certain level. Because the enemy thought that Qasem Soleimani was a brigadier general or a general, like one of the generals of the U.S. Army. Therefore, in practice, they thought of him as a military person who is obsessed with military creativity. The Americans were not aware that Qasem Soleimani is a human being par excellence. And when a person is a human, he becomes an inspiration. This is a focal point to understand. For example, if we say that someone has killed the American president, America will move for political reasons to revenge the killing of its president. But no one will move to defend an American president as an inspiration, role model, or school of thought. America will move from the standpoint of American national security. But when they assassinated Haj Qasem Soleimani, they did not realize that Qasem Soleimani was not just a military hand. He was an example of an inspiring leader. Therefore, his martyrdom was tantamount to igniting all hearts and minds, because somewhere they targeted the aspiration or the model of an entire movement. They targeted something that every individual and every group wanted. Everyone aspires to liberation. Therefore, we saw after the martyrdom of Haj Qasem Soleimani, the wave at the regional level moved in its approach from just bordering the U.S. occupation and hegemony to full confrontation with the Americans. And also at the level of the interior and the internal environment, those who did not know this human leader and did not know what his school produced, somewhere they started to get to know more and more about this school. And they started to be inspired by this school and by this leader. Qasem Soleimani has become a symbol in every home, every child's room, a picture on every teenager's locker, and in every parenting and education center. Whether at the partisan level or the movement level, he became the model and the hero. After his assassination, a new path was opened for the youth to make Haj Qasem Soleimani their aspiration and role model. This is a major shift that might not have happened had it not been for this assassination.
Definitely, which is why on the third anniversary of his martyrdom, we see that the Soleimani school is the role model for the resistance youth for their need in the path of jihad. Now, it is the school of both soft power and the struggle to attain faith. Is it truly that hard to struggle to attain faith to continue the oath of Sardar Soleimani?
No, I don't think it's difficult, because we are simply talking about the comprehensive personality that succeeded and achieved great success stories in the military field, and then built all the elements of strength. Therefore, when we talk about this school's ability to confront the West in its military strength and succeed in that, we cannot say that this success was purely military. Rather, it was based on a system that enabled Qasim Soleimani to bring about this victory or this success. Therefore, with the same determination, will, mentality, and comprehensive ground for the approach, we can enter into all areas of conflict and make a qualitative difference and achieve success stories. This is what we can say today on the third anniversary of the assassination of Haj Qasim Soleimani. I do not like to divide power into soft power, rough power, and hard power. I do not suppose that this division is correct, because no element of power can be separated. It is all one interacting reality. This one interacting reality has a property. It has taste and flavor. It has a special meaning in our authentic Muhammad Alawi Islamic understanding. This meaning of power and how to turn it into an ability embodied par excellence with the model of Haj Qasim Soleimani, and thus succeeded and was able to bring about the greatest achievement in one of the many fields, which is the military field. And with the same understanding and background, the same comprehensiveness of the approach, and the same understanding of power and how to transform it into ability, it is possible when we enter into other fields, such as the economic field or the novel and narrative field in the next stage, we can also achieve success. Because we do not look with the school and thought of Haj Qasim Soleimani on the issue of jihad as fragmented issues or as isolated issues. But rather, we look at Haj Qasim Soleimani as a school in which the various headings unite. The origin and ground of this school have cultural and intellectual values. Therefore, we stand with the victory brought about by Haj Qasim Soleimani and with the spirit and wave that he founded after his martyrdom. I think we can enter all the remaining fields and achieve great victories and success stories in them. This is what we are seeing today. Haj Qasim Soleimani built planning as an asset in achieving success and achievement. In 1898, the Jewish Zionists met one day to set up the establishment of the Zionist entity, and after 40 or 50 years in 1948, they succeeded, with international sponsorship and international embrace, in establishing the Zionist entity. But regarding the school of Qasim Soleimani, which was a school of Imam Khomeini, we notice from the first moment of Imam Khomeini's revolution until today, after 44 years, we stand and ask, what has become of Israel? So this mind and this school were able to establish during 44 years of planning and thinking. And this is something new, because it reflects a system of values and is not a random military action or a military action as per the ISIS approach. Planning got us to this day. After 44 years, we find that Israel suffers not only at the level of region, but at the level of its heart, that is, in the lands of Palestine 48 and 67. So Qasim Soleimani's school taught us software resistance, taught us how to think, taught us will, determination, planning, understanding arenas, and understanding weaknesses. The field of defiance remains with its weapons, which we can prepare for the fight according to the nature of the field.
Dr. Bilal Laqis, academic researcher and political commentator, it's been an honor, it's been a joy, and it's been definitely one of the most educative episodes about Qasim Soleimani that we have done so far. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your contribution to this very special show. And to you, ladies and gents, we tell you, we are all Qasim Soleimani. On the third anniversary of Haj Qasim Soleimani and his brother and companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and their friends who were killed in broad daylight, despite the fact that it was nighttime, but it was in the broad daylight of media seeing it, watching it, even taking photos of it as it happens, you have not killed Soleimani. You have brought Soleimani into our own insights, our own mental system, our own programming as humans with values. This is why Soleimani will stay with us and will further become the hero of the generations to come. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned. Sometimes the temporary tiredness and feeling downcast is because of a spiritual tiredness and not the physical one. Now, there are some religious men and women who want to exceed in doing recommended deeds in a short time, and by doing so, they make their soul tired. After some days, they become tired spiritually, and they can't continue doing recommended deeds.
یا مورد دیگه این مورد عجیبی اینا فقط تو روایات ما هست گاهی ماها تربیت های الهی هست که خدا کسالت بده.
Sometimes the spiritual tiredness is the test of Allah for His good people. This is when a person becomes proud of his or her spiritual growth and boasts for it. In such occasions, Allah, in order to show that we must not be proud, will make you asleep one or two nights. This way, you miss your midnight supplications and you feel tired. Then you start blaming yourself and become regretful for your arrogance. This way, Allah nurtures your spirituality, and by temporary tiredness in your soul, wants you not to exceed in your religious efforts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a shorter speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Saudi kingdom continues to oppress and harass its citizens amid international silence and the support of Western countries. Many international human rights organizations have expressed concern that a loophole in Saudi Arabia's laws allows the country's judges to continue issuing the death penalty to innocent people for minor charges. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website Saudi Leaks has covered this story and tells us more. Human Rights Watch listed Saudi Arabia among the 10 most prominent human rights violators worldwide in 2022. The organization highlighted the mass execution of 81 men in Saudi Arabia, which ranked second in the top 10 human rights violators worldwide. The organization indicated that on March 12, 2022, the Saudi authorities executed 81 men, their largest mass execution in years, despite recent promises to limit the use of the death penalty. and with the largest execution massacre in Saudi Arabia's history and record sentences close to a century, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman tightened his grip on the country in 2022, more than ever before, granting himself tyrannical powers. Mohammed bin Salman appointed himself prime minister, shielded by interests and diplomacy from any prosecution, and with free hand in heinous human rights violations. As an inevitable result of Crown Prince's cruelty, the intensity of repression in Saudi Arabia increased in 2022 to carry out the largest mass execution, and dozens await their fate in death rows, including minors and individuals who did not face serious charges. Human rights defenders, on the other hand, activists, scholars, academics and bloggers, and dissidents are in detention centres. Women are being prosecuted. Freedom of opinion and freedom of expression is being violated, and people are being displaced from their lands and homes. With the onset of 2022 and the impact of the energy crisis, global political fluctuations and the Russia-Ukraine war, the diplomatic embargo on Saudi Arabia was broken. After a visit by the French President Emmanuel Macron at the end of 2021, Mohammed bin Salman inaugurated the season of diplomatic visits that had been prohibited since the brutal killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi embassy in Istanbul, Turkey, and the hierarchy of human rights file was lost between the energy and economic files. In March of 2022, Mohammed bin Salman received British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. US President Joe Biden was received in July, and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was received in September. These visits constitute the tip of the iceberg of normalization countries have made with Saudi Arabia's violations. In parallel with breaking the isolation, Saudi Arabia carried out, in March of last year, the largest mass execution in the country's history, followed by grave violations including arbitrary sentences of up to 90 years in prison against activists, not for great crimes, but just for making tweets, really for making tweets. The Tasnim News Agency has also covered the same story. A non-governmental organization recently warned a new mass execution could happen in Saudi Arabia anytime soon, slamming massive violations of human rights in the kingdom. The Committee for Defense of Human Rights in the Arabian Peninsula said in a statement that the so-called Specialized Criminal Court in the capital Riyadh has sentenced several more Saudi nationals to death. Simply, for the sake of expressing their opinions on social media platforms or participating in peaceful pro-democracy rallies or denouncing social discrimination in Saudi Arabia. The Beirut-based human rights organization went on to highlight that the issuance of such arbitrary rulings on numerous occasions proves the hollow nature of the House of Saud's claim about respect for human rights. The Committee for the Defense of Human Rights in the Arabian Peninsula said, Saudi Arabia is the kingdom of terror, and called on the international community and human rights institutions around the world to stop the looming mass executions in Saudi Arabia, which could take place under false accusations and not be based on legal criteria. It also identified some of those who have been handed down death sentences. These individuals include Yusuf al-Mansaf, Abdulmajid al-Namr, Javad Qariris, Muhammad al-Faraj, Hassan Zaki al-Faraj, and Ali Hassan al-Subaiti. Since Mohammed bin Salman became Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler in 2017, the kingdom has arrested hundreds of activists, hundreds of bloggers, intellectuals, and others for their political activism, showing almost zero tolerance for dissent, even in the face of international condemnation. Muslim scholars have been executed, and women's rights campaigners have also been put behind bars and tortured as freedom of expression, freedom of association, and belief continue to be denied by the kingdom's legal authorities. Over the past years, Riyadh has also redefined its anti-terrorism laws to target activism and dissent. The Conversation website has also covered the same story and tells us more. Saudi Arabia recently sentenced Noura bint Saeed Al-Qahtani to 45 years in prison after she had expressed her views on social media sites. This comes just a couple of weeks after a Leeds University student, Salma Al-Shahab, was sentenced to 34 years in prison for using Twitter to retweet views of activists who are critical of the country. There had been a few small signs that Saudi Arabia had been offering its women a few more freedoms in the past few years, but recent harsh prison sentences against women activists have sparked increased debate about the country's human rights abuses. Despite these cases, Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler, Mohammed bin Salman, was invited to Queen Elizabeth II's funeral, although in the end, a government minister attended in his place. The fiancé of murdered journalist Jamal Khashoggi, Hatice Cengiz, criticised the invitation of Mohammed bin Salman and its implications that the United Kingdom and the international community were turning a blind eye to Saudi Arabia's excesses. One factor that means that the West is less likely to criticise Saudi Arabia right now is the war in Ukraine. However, the imprisonment of these two women is just an intensification of long-term oppression of women in Saudi Arabia by the regime, while the West looks the other way. The Trump administration avoided the issue, refraining from criticizing Saudi Arabia's human rights record. Donald Trump made Saudi Arabia part of his first foreign trip and further affirmed the U.S.'s long-standing policy of keeping a close partnership with Saudi Arabia. The Obama administration was more critical and raised some concerns over human rights in Saudi Arabia, though it still maintained a stable working relationship with the Saudis. Britain, as another key global actor, has more or less followed the same trajectory as the United States. It cooperates with Saudi Arabia on a variety of matters, politically, militarily, economically, and even selling Saudi Arabia arms that the latter then has used to indiscriminately kill people in Yemen. Saudi Arabia has had one of the poorest human rights records in the world for decades. Some would argue that the West has been letting Saudi Arabia get away with it with human rights violations for many years.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a very important question, a question that, you know, is a subject of debate, you know, amongst people. You know, this is a topic that is a point of contention amongst people. It causes a lot of friction, you know, amongst people, you know, a lot of arguments ensue between both parties. That question is about taqlid and the imitation of a mujtahid in matters of faith. A lot of people don't believe in taqlid. A lot of people don't want to imitate a certain person in, you know, matters of faith. And, you know, they ask, you know, why is it necessary to do taqlid? You know, there's nothing in the Quran or Sunnah which says that we have to. A lot of them also point out to the fact that, you know, such was not the case in the early days of Islam, you know, there was no, you know, there was no experts in religion, right? The Prophet would come, he would, you know, he would recite a verse of the Holy Quran. A verse of the Holy Quran would be revealed. He would recite it to the people and they would follow it simply. It wouldn't like be a group of people who were experts regarding this verse of the Holy Quran, who would analyze the verse of the Holy Quran and come to opinion regarding it. And then, you know, the people would follow them. The same thing with hadith, right? The same thing with hadith. You know, so there is no, they say that, especially in the times of our Aima alayhi salam, you know, there was actually books of hadith in the houses of the people, right? We call these the usul, right? These were like, you know, very, you know, these were the main source books from which our hadith books which are in our hands today, such as Al-Kafi and, you know, these other books, they were taken from, right? So these were books in the houses of people, of normal people. People would read these books and they would act upon them, right? So, you know, what is to say, and why is it not possible for us to do the same thing today? A lot of people say this, right? You know, we can refer to the hadiths just like they did and, you know, act upon those hadiths and, you know, come to a conclusion regarding them, right? There's no need to do taqlid, you know. So this is a question that a lot of people ask, right? In order to reinforce this objection, right, because we do have a lot of hadith regarding imitation, right? But in these hadiths, you know, if somebody is, you know, meticulously examines them, the hadiths themselves, a lot of them refer to the ruwatul hadith, the transmitters of hadith, right? So this, it doesn't say follow, you know, the people should follow a mujtahid, an expert in religion. No, it says that, you know, amma rawatu hadithina, you know, regarding the transmitters of our hadith, you know, people should follow them, right? You know, arraddu alayhim karraddi alayna. Those who reject them, reject us, right? It doesn't say anything about people who examine the hadith or discuss hadith, you know, transmitters of hadith, right? So we are following transmitters of hadith. I can pick up a book of Kafi and, you know, read it and come to opinion. Right. So this is kind of reinforcing the objection. In response to this, you know, we can say this, that the reason why there's a difference between people in those times, in the time of our Aima and our time, this of course should be examined in scholarly discussions, but in that era, these hadiths, right, they were, the environment was such, right, there were certain clues in the environment themselves which kind of definitively determined what the meaning of those hadiths were, right? Because time has passed, a lot of time has passed from those eras, a lot of the meanings of those hadiths have become lost to us simply because of the passing of time, right? So coming to a definitive conclusion regarding these, the meaning of these hadiths requires a certain level of expertise, and that's why we should follow mujtahids in matters of faith. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at imitation and taqlid in matters of faith. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.